Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's 5:39 parsecs on Tatooine, and you're listening to Night Call.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Night Call, a podcast for your snow planet days and desert planet nights. We are here in the garage today with my very good friend, as always, Tess Lynch.
Hello.
And joining us today, a very, very fine Star Wars enthusiast.
Whoa.
Andrew T.
Not cool, Molly. What's up? I'm Andrew.
Andrew, plug your stuff.
Oh, yeah. I do a podcast called Yo, Is This Racist? Just me and a co-host talking about making jokes.
Tell us
jokes.
About your co-host. She's really cool.
Oh, yeah. You just met her a couple of days ago. A new co-host. Her name is Tawny Newsom. She's great. And it really brings a good energy up into the podcast house.
You guys have some really good new promo art also.
Oh, yeah.
Where you're like yelling into the phone dressed like business people.
Yeah. Tawny came up with the idea for it. And we got like a real ass photo shoot, which is
crazy. It's really good. It made me be like, thanks. I would like to watch this legal drama where you and Tawny are a couple of people yelling into phones.
Also, I have to say, Andrew's podcast was one of our first favorite podcasts. How long have you been doing Yo, Is This Racist?
A long time now. Like 4 years? 3 years? 4 years?
That is like an endless lifetime in podcasting.
I know.
It is.
I was, when I first started podcasting, the deal with Earwolf, the company, was, don't worry, we're not going to make any money, but the idea is we'll try to turn this into a TV show because they're also TV producers. And I was like, great. And then later on, they were like, actually, it turns out people can make money from podcasting, so you're going to have to try.
And now you're making so much money as a podcaster, as are we all.
Yeah, a true pioneer in the field.
I had to, change it up.
Yeah, but I mean, you've been doing that podcast for a long time now.
Yeah,
it's a very good, actually useful podcast.
I think it was the first one I ever listened to.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Wow.
I've had like 5 podcasts since then, including one that you were my co-host on.
Oh my God. Yeah. North Mollywood.
North Mollywood.
R.I.P.
Do you know that was just like 1 year ago?
You had Girls in Hoodies.
Girls in Hoodies.
Then you had...
Then I had, it was called The Lambert Report.
How? Wait, what?
I had a show by myself on Grantland for a while after the Girls in Hoodies were no longer there, called The Lambert Report, because there was like an episode of Melrose Place I watched where somebody was like, look at these statistics from the Lambert Report.
What?
And I was like, that's my show name. I couldn't find the clip ever again, so I could never really explain why that was the show.
I mean, it sounds so serious. It's like the Palmer Report.
I think I thought it was funny, and, you know, it sort of is to me.
That is super funny.
And then weird. Dave Schilling was my co-host on that for a little bit. And then I had North Mollywood at MTV.
Yeah, I missed the Lambert Report entirely.
It's a brief, it was, you know, only the truest
It's heads. A B-side.
Yeah, it's all a unified universe of Molly Lambert podcasting. I guess it was actually, did I say it was the Lambert account? Or did I say Lambert Report? Report? No, they're Lambert. Okay, I called it the Lambert account because Bill Simmons had a podcast called the BS Report.
Right.
And then there was the Lambert account. On Melrose Place.
Oh, I remember that.
And I thought it was funny. But I had like Megan Amram on. It was basically just like a dry run for Molly's Lazy Friends. It was just like me interviewing people one at a time. Shout out Megan Amram.
Get that Emmy,
get
girl.
Get that Emmy.
Get it.
You have that night
she'll
call.
She'll probably get it.
I hope she
gets
it.
I think she'll get it.
Actually, if we're plugging my old podcasts, the very first one I did like 7 years ago, just on a laptop, was called A Round of Applause with Travis and Andrew. 4 episodes, and you can still find them.
My college radio show was called Live from the Masterdome, because that was the name of the auditorium in my friend Lizzie's school, and I thought it was funny. And I totally tricked them into giving me a show where I just talked a lot, because I did a radio theater show, and then I like found out how much work it was to produce radio theater every week.
Oh my god.
I did produce like 2 plays on like live plays, and then I was like, what if instead of that I just like play fire sign theater cuts and then like talk in between? But it's definitely sort of the framework for all the podcasting I do, which is
we talked about on North Mollywood about reading one of those plays, and we never made it happen.
The best play that Molly's ever written is An Ice Cream Man for All Seasons, which she wrote in 12th grade.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a very good play.
My sister was just at home in Michigan, and she started sending me, like texting me pictures from a picture book I wrote when I think fourth or fifth grade or something like that.
Was that the one where it looked like you were trying to overthrow the government?
Yeah.
I saw that.
It's super fascist, though. It's about the secret agent union. For some reason, I was really anti-secret agent union at the time, which I guess is fair.
I mean, at least they were a union.
We're going to post this on our Instagram. Yeah. This kind of reminds me of, do you guys know there's a comics guy named Ben Mara who's really awesome? He does these really awesome comics. I love his comics. He has a comic called Night Business that totally is like of the Night Call universe that all just takes place like at night. It's like all 80s movie action kind of tropes. You would love it. He did one called One Man War on Terrorism that's really like, they're sort of like parodies of like super super far right like action-y, you know, military 80s comic stuff. You would love it.
Speaking of angry men.
Oh yeah, speaking of fascism. Tess, I just would love you to lead off with the thing you just told me about who invented the term incel, which you just learned yesterday.
So here's the deal. I haven't looked ever at the Wikipedia for incels because I get so anxious and angry when I read the New York Times and some op-ed columnist is saying, hey, look, well, let's redistribute sex because the incels have a point. So I forced myself for the podcast to look into the Wikipedia for incels. The first time that the term incel was used was in 1993 by a woman named Alana. She was a Canadian college student. And so she made a website to talk about being like socially awkward and not having sex. And then that turned into a newsletter. And then the term was co-opted, obviously, by a bunch of people who suck. And she was appalled. And I guess eventually she discovered that she was queer and like things got much better for her. And she was like, oh, I think I was just like figuring stuff out. You know, it was nice to have a community. And now that's been totally weaponized and is awful. In Wikipedia, it says when Alana read about the 2014 Isla Vista killings and the way parts of the incel subculture glorified the perpetrator, Elliot Rodger, she wrote, like a scientist who invented something that ended up being a weapon of war, I can't uninvent the word nor restrict it to the nicer people who need it. And so that sucks.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
You know, that's also, like, I feel like that's so similar to, like, Matt Fury, who did Boys Club, the comic that Pepe comes from, and who is not a Pepe at all and hates Pepes and is like, wow, like my character, you know, just because of like randomly being chosen for that meme and becoming like, imagine that if you're like your creation becomes just like a symbol of everything bad that you hate.
Yep. Yeah, it was intended to be the opposite of what it was.
I mean, I didn't know that. It's so weird too, the way that like the far right, alt-right people have like weaponized identity politics as though it's like something for them, you know? But like the way they use terminology.
Yeah,
like,
they're just postmodern Nazis.
That's what it is. The postmodern Nazis is very confusing to me because I was like saying yesterday, like I was looking at Alex Jones's Twitter feed because he was talking about how...
Oh, you guys got plans for July 4th?
About how the Democrats are starting the Civil War on July 4th and everybody was like, nobody's organized enough to get it going. Come on, guys. Yep. Maybe next year. I was like...
What would that entail?
Yeah. But then his other tweet, he had like a Malcolm X tweet, and it was like a Malcolm X quote. I didn't Google it to see if it was a real quote. I think it might have been. But it was like a picture of Malcolm X with an InfoWars graphic on it.
And but basically, the quote is from Malcolm X saying, don't trust the media, which is true for him. And not true for white men.
Yeah.
Right.
That, like, he's
But it's also, like, just to drop that in the middle of this feed that's also all this white supremacist, like, incitement of, like, you know, white men are going extinct and stuff. And it's just, like, to think that you can just, like, throw Malcolm X in there with no context and be like, this all goes together, I guess, is the postmodernism part that I'm just like, like, what?
They also have a postmodern white supremacy, because that's the idea. It's like, well, obviously, like, we're not racist.
Right.
But, like, we just...
Joke racism, except we really want to kill those people.
I don't think they even necessarily do. It's just like...
Well, somebody said, do you really want to know the answer to this? This guy who on Twitter goes by Webb. Who is cool? He was like, here's what I have like decided about this, or you know, heard about this, is like that it is that the white supremacists like Malcolm X because he was a black separatist.
Oh, I don't think it reaches that deep because white supremacists will use Martin Luther King.
Yeah, it's the same thing. I guess so. Yeah, I was like, that seems like. Like, because they were like, you know, because they also want, like, separatism. And I was like, but I don't think the kind of separatism they want is, like, it everyone gets their own land.
But I think it doesn't need to be that consistent. It's just, like,
they're, it's not like, consistent at all, and that's what's so, like, freaky about it.
Yeah, but here, okay, this is the same thing that's, like... Like, all the people are like, oh, Mitch McConnell, like, we can just point out what a hypocrite he is and he'll back down. And the thing is, it's not a hypocrite. It's just, like, every moment of every action is just in the service of white supremacy with no fore or pre-thought to it. And if you realize that's how they operate, it's all totally consistent.
But also, their whole ideology is to be, like, if you say that, they're like... You're the Nazi for calling us Nazis. Yeah. Like, how dare you accuse us of this horrible thing that we would never do? And that's like, Tess and I just did this podcast, Behind the Bastards, where we talked a lot of shit on Nancy Reagan for a long time. And we ended
She was not the bastard, by the way.
She was not the person. Her astrologer was the bastard.
Joan Quigley. And but Molly and I were like...
We were not given an inch.
Like our Rasputin too.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And we were just like, no one should feel bad for manipulating Nancy Reagan. She's a trash person.
What it kind of boils down to is that Nancy Reagan's astrologer was also a kind of like rich socialite white lady whose politics were also bad, but the decisions Nancy Reagan was making were Nancy Reagan's decisions. The astrologers just told her when to do it.
Yeah. So what we learned was that the Reagans held all their meetings and press conferences at like super weird times because the astrologer told them they had to.
Oh.
Yeah. Which was really interesting.
Was it like Christian astrology?
It was like literally this lady who was the astrologer was like a rich San Francisco white lady socialite who didn't want to do astrology for poor people. She had a column in 17 magazine and then she was like, no, like the hordes don't deserve...
That's
to
true.
Know about the stars. Only like very rich and famous people should know, and I will be the one who guides them. And then she became Nancy Reagan's astrologer. Tess and I were just talking a lot about the Reagan years and about the Reagans and how much they sucked and how so many of the policies of the Trump administration are just like the same stuff, but more naked, you know? And that's what horrifies people, is the idea that it's like, they're not putting the gloves on. They're not hiding behind a facade of like fancy white people stuff.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I think the Reagans would have absolutely hated what Trump was doing.
Of course, but it's all like respectability.
No, say it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
But it's like white supremacy respectability politics. It's like they, you know, how dare you be like a low class white supremacist? Yeah, yeah. Like we're, you know, British colonizers who like
that's right.
put a crown on it.
Like Republicans have been this our entire lifetimes, and I wager the lifetime of anyone listening to this podcast.
Hey, there might be one ageless demon.
Yeah. Or a, like, 98-year-old, like, what's up, great-grandma?
Yeah, none of the policies are different.
Right, like, right.
It's all the same shit.
I mean, but incels and white supremacists are overlapping Venn diagrams.
They're overlapping. Basically, I feel like there's that thing where someone predicted what would happen in, like, 2014 or something. I don't know if this is even real or if somebody retconned a meme to make it look like it predicted the future. But it was like, here's what's going to happen. Like, the incels are going to team up with the 4chan people and they're going to get into neo-fascism. But it's like, if you had said that to anyone in 2014, you would have been like, nah, that's crazy. Somebody else is telling me that, like, 2chan, which is the board that 4chan was based off of, do it for the lulz, fucking, you know, doxing people, just all the stuff we associate with, like, the dark side of, like, the dark side of the internet, and that 2chan eventually turned into, like, a Japanese, like, fascist, like, nationalist, just because it's a lot of, like, alienated, basement-dwelling white guys who are like, I'm not gonna get mine,
and
I can weaponize my anger about that and make everyone afraid, and then I have power. I mean, the thing I get super pissed about with the incels, although now that I know that where incel comes from, I'm also like, yeah, like, what about the lady incels? Like, male incels at least have the option of, like, paying for sex, you know? I guess there's, like, that thing that male nerds do where they're just like, any woman can have sex, like, anytime she wants.
There was something so chilling, though, about this wave of editorials and kind of opinions being like, well, what if every woman did feel like maybe they should? And it was like, I clutched my pearls.
I clutched my pearls because I was like, I can't believe this is being like aired as a real opinion.
Exactly.
In a time when there are lots of really important things happening and this is definitely not the important thing. But it also reminded me of like in like junior high, I was like, okay, I remember being like 13 and like realizing that like everyone just liked the hot people and being like, wait, like everyone just likes the two hot people. Like, why can't we like put the people of similar social status together, you know, trying to like put logic into it. And then it's like, cause nobody wants to be with the person that's like the same as them.
Yep.
Oh man.
You know, like if you showed all these incels the woman that they deserve, or like not that they deserve any women, but like the female equivalent of them, they wouldn't be into it. You know, they're like also adding a level of male entitlement of like, we deserve hot chicks for just like being men in the world, which is like the part that makes me insane.
I mean, I just to go back to the predicting thing, it was clear these guys were misogynists who were absolutely ready to be, you know, fascist in the way that bigotry always intersects with everything else.
I didn't think they would take it to real life. I thought it was like the internet cesspool just would like stay there, you know, that they were all like cowards.
Well, yeah, they are, but the thing with cowards is...
I mean, they are, just cowards with access to weapons and editorial
columns. Well,
access
to weapons and access to a community. That's why I've always been, like, of the, you know, people who are like, it's just better when the racism's out in the open. It's like, I actually just prefer when I know who the racists are. Or isn't it better to have it out in the open than have it, like, simmered and, or, you know, buried and simmering somewhere? I disagree with that.
Yeah.
The analogy I think I've used on my podcast is like, it's like putting out a campfire. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, if you bury the coals, there are definitely still coals under the dirt. But the odds of those coals catching another piece of wood on fire and making two coals is much smaller when you bury it.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like there, again, to just talk about like the respectability of like the styles of racism, like, people in California are like delusional, especially, mm-hmm. you know, left-wing people, a lot of people are just delusional that California is like a good place where good people sure. live and like that it doesn't happen here. And it does happen here all the time. This woman in Simi Valley just like yelled at a kid who was like...
That picture was horrifying.
That picture is horrifying.
The kid was like 14.
My friend Aisha Siddiqui was posting it like, this is in Simi Valley. Like, you know,
yeah.
there's an ICE facility downtown, like by the mayor's office. Yeah. Like... Yeah. It is super in Los Angeles, everywhere, and just, like, the way racism exists here is just different than it yeah. is in other places.
Well, it's because it's a segregated city.
Mm-hmm. Well, all cities are segregated, I feel like.
It's more segregated.
Yeah,
than
it's segregated, I guess, because it's so big.
And because yeah. of the planning. I mean, yeah. also because it's become so expensive, that's another yeah. factor yeah. for sure. But, I mean, it's difficult, too, to see the proposition that, you know, California be split into three states.
Oh, man. I have a take on that. It's my hot take.
Give it.
The only Cal exit that I'm pro is my idea is Cal Mexit.
Yes.
And we give California back to Mexico.
You know what, though? Yeah. yeah, that's the problem is that anytime, you know, you lose so much power.
Again, these are things that I'm like, these are funny to think about because, like, no one's going to die from, like, us all thinking about it, you know?
Well, here's why some people will die is that it will solidify, if that happens, it'll solidify, it'll basically, those three states will have... Two of them will be Republicans.
Oh, yeah. 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 I don't think it'll happen. Also.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think it's in anyone's interest for it to happen.
It's basically Wait. Gerrymandering. You're pushing yeah. all the liberals.
Well, it's like trying to make up for a mistake yeah. they made in the first place, which was just like getting this huge piece of land from Mexico.
Right.
yeah, yeah.
But also,
which is like, I'm like, just give it back to Mexico.
But the original Cal exit was packaged as a kind of like, it was packaged to liberals. And I was gullible
oh,
enough
right,
at
because
first.
Because they were like, get ourselves out.
Yeah. They were like, you know, we'll legalize weed, which yeah, they did. Yeah, yeah. Like, we're, you know, very oh, no. democratic state in general.
I'm
like,
not letting the tech bros get in charge. Yeah.
Well,
that's
what I'm saying. It was yeah. funded by a guy with Russian ties. Was yeah. he actually Russian? I don't even remember. And Peter Thiel did he actually yeah. start
Peter Thiel lives here. Elon Musk lives yeah. here. Fucking
well, it's just
Stephen
tech,
Miller group.
Tech bros are libertarian. Like,
right. But like.
Want white supremacy.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's yeah. hard for me. Like, I've realized this. We were talking about this on, I guess it was a Molly Sleazy Friends reunion episode of North Mollywood where we talked about Blade Runner.
Mm-hmm.
Blade Runner.
Blade Runner.
And I was, like, saying that the scary thing about the Blade Runner reboot was that it was, like, very white. And everybody was like, well, it takes place in L.A. And I was like, oh, well, that's the super dystopian future is, like, that these white supremacists, like, want for L.A. to be the, you know, where they see it and they just see land, you know?
Yeah.
Which is just colonialism. It's just being like, hey, this thing where all this stuff exists is a blank slate. And I can't wait to, like, put my stuff here.
Can we tag it? Because the other thing that happens in the new Blade Runner is that San Diego is just the landfill for
yeah,
L.A.
but that's funny.
Is just true.
yeah, yeah, yeah. But you were like, you're thinking about this more than the people who made Blade Runner thought about it.
Yeah, they're stupid people.
maybe you need to do another Blade Runner.
Blade the Inhaler. Where everyone get high and you have to watch Blade Runner.
Wait, you guys, did we just make a spinoff that we're actually going to do?
Just throw it out there.
Well, speaking of franchises.
Nice.
Oh, man.
Let's hear first about what is happening with Star Wars. What happened?
Oh, man. I can't believe y'all had not heard about this.
There's so much happening all the time.
I'm, like, allergic to Star Wars, you guys.
So, to dovetail from incels, there's these people, a group of Star Wars fans, quote-unquote, who are very mad at the new Star Wars
Star
movies.
Cells.
Star Cells.
They're
Star
They're
Wars.
They're definitely cells.
Celibate, yes. And they're really mad for reasons that they typically articulate as, oh, you're ruining the legacy of Star Wars. Which, by the way, three super boring movies. Star Wars movies are the boringest. And what, you know, it's sort of like what we're talking about in politics, it's like they use the language of a little bit of film criticism, a little bit of, like, sort of protecting nostalgia,
oh,
a little
yeah.
bit of, like, you know, keep Star Wars great
yeah.
or whatever.
I've been on film Twitter.
Yeah. But the underlying message is we don't like change and we don't like diversity. So that's why they're extra mad at the new
right.
ones.
Diversity and change are ruining the movies. But, like, did they like the second three that nobody liked? Did they like Anakin?
I assume
those movies were pretty boring and white.
Just think it's getting worse and worse with each iteration.
I think the new ones, the current iteration, I think there's a revisionist history about how much they like the prequels. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that they really hone in on is the fact that the head of Lucasfilm post Disney acquisition is a woman named Kathleen Kennedy. Who
has produced a lot of really good big movies.
Yeah, but she's a woman, critically, is the thing that they're most mad at.
Do they know that a woman is in charge of the James Bond movies also? Like,
don't tell them, Molly.
Those movies are bad, too.
Those are the worst.
I was never a Star Wars person. Emily Yoshida, our resident Star Wars fan, is not here today, but she'll come back to tell us about why Star Wars is good and we're wrong.
Star Wars is fine, but here's the thing with Star Wars, is the best Star Wars movie is whatever the last one you saw is.
No, yeah. I don't know. Okay, I have seen the first Star Wars a lot of times and always was like, this is boring, I don't care. Yeah. And then I finally watched the second two and I was like, oh, these are good.
No, watch like Rogue
the
One.
The second one. Yeah, sure.
They're just fine. They're great.
Empire Strikes Back is a good movie. Yeah. I'm also like, I'm such a non-traditionalist that I like the Ewoks, you know?
Yeah.
True Star Wars fans, I think, thought the Ewoks were an abomination.
No, but see, that's the thing. It's like, so there's this group of white guys who are like the gatekeepers, who are, you know, the same people you see at working at a comic book store or a guitar store.
I think I just always assume some of these people, it's like that really good first Black Mirror episode about Star Trek.
Oh, yeah, the first one of this past season.
Like, if someone's an introvert who likes comic books, like, I don't assume they're, like, secretly, like, a homicidal, like, misogynist maniac. But it turns out a lot of them are. Yeah. Like, I just was like...
Well, look, they're allowed to have their opinions, but what are they doing?
No, they're not allowed to have their opinions.
Fair. They're not allowed.
They're trying to remake Star Wars.
So these guys have basically been throwing a hissy fit since the new J.J. Abrams one came out. I don't remember what it's called. Mm-hmm. You know, and The Last Jedi, they always have campaigns. They harass Kelly Marie Tran off of Instagram.
Oh, yeah. I saw that. Was fucked up.
They always point to the fact that the Rotten Tomatoes film score is way lower than the critic score.
Right, because they, like...
Because they stuff the ballots.
Yeah.
And, like, for what it's worth, what's the other one? Like, Metacritic or one of those does one based on polling, random sampling, as opposed to people who go. And guess what? Most people love The Last Jedi because it's great.
Right, and because it's for fucking children.
Yeah, but also it's diverse and it's for everyone.
Right.
I will just say, Molly, like, using the terminology real Star Wars fans plays into their rhetoric, which is that these white misogynist nerds are the ones who are the real fans of a multi-billion dollar franchise. Like, guess what?
Right.
It's not just you guys.
You're
not the only person who likes Led Zeppelin, it turns out.
The smallest part of this pie.
But the loudest. That's what I'm like. I'm like, why do we pander to these people by giving them any airtime at all? And it's like, because they're so loud.
Yeah.
Like, why does anyone let anyone write about why white incels should, like, redistribute sex or, like...
Because same with, like, the Amon Bundy people. It's because they're like dangerous white men,
right?
Who
I'm just like, I could,
we
you know,
can't well, we can't correct like mass shootings because we refuse to acknowledge that white men are
like
a problem,
make right. Them, right?
So that's why we have to give their argument credence.
No,
that's
we have to make
so.
Them afraid of us,
but you also you have to understand, you know, you have to like let the message seep in enough so that you can rebut it. You right. can't, it being
but
ignorant
like,
about it is
like,
sorry, I was
a...
using scare quotes around the
oh,
we.
Yeah.
When I said we have to let them air it out, it's because. Yeah. Like, the media, like, New York Times needs to give incels a bunch of column inches to make their point.
But, like,
because
shouldn't
the New
they
York
give
Times
me...
can't just be like, we live in a misogynist, sexist, or racist society that makes these people entitled.
I was
wouldn't
just
it be
thinking
so nice?
About, like, yeah. What if you could write that op-ed, though, where you're like, hey, I've got an idea. Like, let's just cut everyone's dicks off.
Yeah.
You know? Like, that, to me, is just the same of an idea. It's like, hey, it's crazy. I know we haven't thought about it before, but, like... Dicks make a lot of problems in this world, and what if we just, like, cut them all off?
Well, I think in particular the context that the this is, again, we're like hopping and skipping around the topics. But I think when you are a woman or a person of color and you see a lot of terrifying signals and then somebody writes in the New York Times like, hey, it's not that crazy to talk about redistributing sex, and also lumping sex robots and sex workers into the same paragraph as though they are the same. Ugh. I mean, that it's a terrifying thing. I mean, so when you start thinking about, like, let's cut their dicks off, it would seem preposterous because there haven't been all of these incremental, you know, losses of dignity and really terrifying laws being proposed that target people with dicks.
Well, right. Speaking of targeting people with dicks, one of the Star Wars people wrote this manifesto about why The Last Jedi is bad, and there's a line in it about how one of the problems with it is that it denigrates masculinity somehow, which is like, oh, you're supposed to say
why?
The quiet
because,
part.
Yeah,
like,
keeps,
you said the Kylo quiet part Ren out loud. Is like a little baby bitch boy.
Who knows? It doesn't matter. I mean, basically, I think it's because, like, the idea that a woman could be a Jedi is very upsetting
but,
to them.
Like, that is so weird to me, because the whole thing about Star Wars is that you have Princess Leia, who is, like, essentially a Jedi, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, and they had Natalie Portman had a sword and stuff. Like, the whole thing about those movies that makes them more tolerable to me than, like, other boring dude things is, like, that there's a woman in them and that the woman is Carrie Fisher.
Right.
You know? That they could have cast, like, a hot chick who doesn't say anything the whole time, and instead it's like Carrie Fisher, and like she and Harrison Ford have great sexual tension, and like that's what makes those movies good. Like the Disney machine idea of like we're just gonna pump out a million Star Wars and like they'll all make money forever has, like, the fact that like Solo did not do well for them and mm-hmm. that nobody was like, okay, like let's just stop forever, like that's what those people ostensibly wanted, was a movie about how cool it is to be Han Solo. And like,
how
they
long
didn't
was
support
this manifesto,
that
by the way?
The manifesto is like one phone screen.
It's okay, so not long.
It's meant to look, I assume, like a Star Wars crawl.
Right. It's too long.
Yeah, it's way too long.
But not as long as you'd be scared it might be.
Here's what I was going to say, too, is like when I kept seeing stuff about the Star Wars remake, because people are making fun of it online, including Rian Johnson, who...
Right. Oh, so this is two separate things. I mean, sort of, they're the same people.
But those people wanted to remake The Last Jedi. They're like, this movie sucks. Yeah. We're going to make a better movie. Give the money to us, the fans.
So here's their pitch. They claim they have an investor who's willing to match funds, a producer who's willing to match the funds of what people donate. They will give the money and the script to Lucasfilm on the condition that they make this movie, or they'll remake it themselves, but just get so many donations they'll buy the rights to Star Wars. Like,
what?
It is hilariously
it's so threatening and like such a little hissy fit.
Well, right, it's so funny that they're not like, it's like, make your own movie. You can just make a fucking space movie. Nobody will stop you.
They're also taking donations, but not like in a way that it is. They're basically taking a pledge and an email address.
Okay, so it's like a Jill Stein.
Yes, but they're not taking real money and not verifying it. So you can just go in and say, there's a cap, but you just add your name to the list of people that
want this.
And say, I'll give you
$10,000. And then Rian Johnson was like, great idea. I'm in.
No, but it's like one of the points in the remake thing is like, write it with a committee, like a writer's room of fans and people who loved and hated The Last Jedi. It's all this stuff, and then
that's how great movies are made.
Movies are made, though. That's what's funny. I'm like, how many movies are just like a committee of people?
Well, it is how like Marvel and Star Wars movies are
cobbling.
Made.
Yeah,
like it is like 14.
Those movies
people.
All have like 20 people writing them.
But it's always amateur fans.
Yeah. And those are big, right? Exactly, yeah, barely competent. True. What if those 14 people were Twitter like maniacs who literally do not understand? They're mad that Luke Skywalker in the new one isn't like the big tough boy that they really want.
But Luke Skywalker was never, he was always the number one soft boy. That was the whole thing about him, is that he was kind of boring, and then Princess Leia and Han Solo are cool, and you're like, he's that little kid that you're letting kick around. And then like Anakin, or like baby Anakin, was like cool Luke Skywalker, and they hated that too.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it's very unclear, but the thing that is hilarious is in the thread after these guys announced this thing, it's just like people pitching ideas and the account going in and being like, yes, of course, that's... it's a little bit like that Key and Peele sketch where the guy's in the coked up writer's room for Gremlins 2 and greenlighting everything that gets pitched.
Yeah.
But it's on Twitter about misogynist pitching ideas about why Carrie Fisher shouldn't have a big moment and why Rey shouldn't exist and why Kelly Marie trans character
Rose. I mean, don't
Rose.
They dare come for Carrie Fisher.
Yeah, I know.
But also, it's like, what is their pitch? They're going to remake it with a CGI Carrie Fisher or file for it's
yeah.
hilarious.
They're going to just like make her CGI and then like someone will come up and kick her in the stomach and they'll be like, hooray, we fixed yeah. Star Wars.
Without being like too Hollywood elitist though too, it's also like, guys, the proposition that you think you can produce any movie at all, like I would love to watch the documentary of this.
Yeah.
It is. Well, yeah. Everything. It's like American Movie.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, but like with like the thing fascists. To do is we like, we become the ghost producer and then we're like, this was like something that maybe really happened also, where somebody sent a bunch of people to an island to make a fake movie as like a tax loophole. But anyway, we send them all to an island where the monsters live and then
it's a little
bit like, problem solved.
Who's that German guy, Uwe Boll?
Yeah.
Who makes all those like fake, like literal tax write-off movies
that
are just like adaptations of video games?
Yeah.
It's like that, but for Star Wars. It's just like, we're joking about it. It's literally a matter of time before one of these people does something violent. So
for Star Wars? But Star Wars spreads a message of peace across the universe. No, it doesn't. It's called Star Wars.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying, though. It's not, like, Triumph of the Will. Like, it's a movie about a bunch of, like,
it is
Jews and
is,
a cool black guy and, like, some
Triumph
cool
of the
monsters.
Will if you read it the right way.
I know, but, like, how can you... It's, that's not... That's what the postmodern Nazis think.
Yeah.
Which I am like, no, that's not true.
Oh, we're at a different point.
Like the guy from Depeche Mode being like, no, my music is like not for fascists. It's like anti-fascist and you can't call it the music of the alt-right because like, yeah. fuck you, I made it. Like, can't George Lucas just be like, fuck these little kitties?
Well, but he, I think, is a little bit like...
He's on their side because he sold the property.
He's not on their side, but I mean...
But he's getting
his
ego stroked by them because they're all like...
Oh, because they're like, you were so much better than the people who do it now.
It's been gone downhill, and so he's...
That's
I think
so
he's
stupid. Ryan Johnson is like the best thing that's ever happened to that franchise.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's so weird. Well, here's what I thought it was about in a more naive and gentle manner. I thought it was like those people who remade Last Crusade. Did you know about that?
Yeah.
There were
Wasn't
like,
that like Channel 101 people?
No, it was like kids in Boston. It was like a thing I like heard tale of in Providence because they would like show it. They were showing it for the first time or something, but it was like...
Right. This was like a documentary.
There's somebody made a documentary about it, but it was like these three kids, like I think they were like brothers or something, and they like remade Last Crusade over...
It's a This American Life, sorry.
Okay, that makes sense. They remade Last Crusade... Not Last Crusade. Raiders of the Lost Ark.
They remade
Raiders of the Lost Ark over a period of like 10 years.
Oh, that sounds great.
It was. It was great. And they remade it with like props from home. So they made like...
They used like a basketball.
They just like did all the effects with like practical home effects that like a 12-year-old would have. And
like
it's
the
greatest
like a
thing.
Or like a paper bag.
It's the best Star Wars.
It's the best. No, it's great. And that's totally what I thought this was. Nope. And I was like, oh, cool. A bunch of kids are going to remake Star Wars with No, that's not what this was at all.
I think it's safe to say if you read about Star Wars ever from present to going forward, it's going to have some misogynist shit attached to
it. That's so weird because, again, like Carrie Fisher being the part of that franchise just to me always was like the thing that stopped it from being the worst nerd thing.
But that was a little bit by accident because they treated her like a piece of meat. That
but
was
again,
the whole
she still
point.
Got like jokes. She still got to like shoot a gun sometimes. You know, like she wasn't just... I don't know.
She wasn't just a prize. She engaged intellectually.
And like I've read about
less than she should have.
She was a babe, but she was like a funny babe, which like she didn't have to be in that movie, and that's what makes those movies good at all.
Guys, yeah. I hate to do this to you, but
we have to.
We have to talk about the bug dick energy of the summer. We have to. We touched on B-movie last time.
We were talking about B-movie a lot. And that's why we were talking about the bees being back in town.
We need to talk about the good and bad bugs because it's summer.
It's summer. Summer is when the bugs invade.
The bugs are back in town. So we got an email and it says, Hi, Night Call. For some reason, bugs in Japan are huge. The Japanese giant hornet can be 4.5 centimeters long with a 6-centimeter wingspan, and the Japanese centipede can be the length and width of your arm, which is fucking terrifying. Both are extremely poisonous. No, thank you. You also have giant rhinoceros and stag beetles that I remember seeing kids play battle with in the park, like a slow, death-free, and cute version of dog fighting. I wonder why they got so big in Japan. And there's a bunch of videos of these ginormous bugs. How cool is that? Thanks for being a very chill podcast I can listen to without getting anxiety from opinions being shared.
This comes from Jiwoo, huh?
Yes.
Thanks, Jiwoo.
Thank you. So I have to say that I looked up, there's a website called tofugu.com, and they have a post about the worst Japanese bugs, but I might argue that some of these are the best Japanese bugs. The Denki Mushi, the electric bug, is a like really insane looking caterpillar with spiky green protrusions, and it stings with a chemical that feels like an electric shock.
Ooh, we're gonna have to ask Emily because she is just getting back from
Japan.
She saw any cool bugs. She posted a video. These aren't bugs, but they're bug adjacent. She posted like a forest just like with crabs in it.
No, because it was raining so much that they thought it was the ocean. And they were so cute.
It was the coolest thing I've ever seen. It was like this incredible, like super green place, and then just these
like crustaceans are very closely
crabs,
related to
bugs.
I mean, they also have bugs. There are two centipedes in this list. The house centipede is good because it eats the other bugs, but there's a Japanese giant centipede that is 15 inches long. It's the symbol of evil in Japanese mythology, and it has like a bite that will send you to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a Japanese
bite that'll send you to the hospital.
Send you to the hospital. The Japanese giant hornet, and I'm just going to quote, not only are these things huge, but they will also spray you in the eyes with a flesh-melting poison if you catch them on a bad day. Oh, did I mention this poison is filled with pheromones that signal the rest of the hive to hunt you down and sting the living crap out of you until you can no longer move your limbs?
Wow.
Is that the one that's supposed to feel like getting shot if you get stung by them?
I think so.
They also say right afterwards that they wish guns were legal in Japan so they could shoot it.
I chose not to read that because you should respect your insect overlords.
I know. Respect well, that's them. I do respect them.
Yeah.
Tess has always known a lot about bugs and
love
been a
bugs.
Cool bug lady. She doesn't like to lead with it, although I feel like you're more talking about it these days.
I'm easing my way out.
She knows a lot about bugs.
Do you guys have favorite or least favorite bugs?
Well,
mine got taken. Mine was gonna be crabs.
Well, they're not
is the best bug.
Are they technically bugs?
No.
Well, all sort. I mean,
but neither are spiders.
Do you call spiders bugs?
No.
Is bugs 100% coincident with insects? Because I would argue.
Yeah, you could argue that bugs are a wider umbrella.
Insects and spiders are under the bugs. Insect spiders, and of course, the Bugs Bunny are under the bugs umbrella.
Well, it's like when you call a group of people guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Guys are bugs.
I respect,
bugs are guys.
I respect all the bugs. I particularly am fond of bees. I love bees.
Love bees.
Mm-hmm. The scorpions that hold their claws up, like, what's up when they get mad?
I love that.
Bugs
I've only
are
named
cool.
arthropods.
Yeah, why are you so into arthropods?
See, look, Andrew knows more about bugs than
I had crab last night.
From where?
Oh, from his home.
I had it at home.
Andrew cooks crab like 100 times a week.
Wait, are you serious?
Yeah, he mentioned this, I forget when we were talking about it, but he talked about, like, you know when you have all that crab stock in your freezer?
Picture looks so
from
good.
From eating a crab for lunch every day.
Busting out.
What do you do with the crabs that you cook? Like what? Oh, in the pot.
Oh, yeah.
So you do like, do you do like southern style boil or like what are
Chinese
you throwing
style.
In there?
Just steam in there and then we had it with black vinegar.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yum.
And I actually just had it with nothing, but I also had a bunch of duck fat sitting around, so I made a duck fat yuzu butter.
Damn, Andrew.
It was pretty good.
Why can't we record this in your garage, Andrew?
Yeah, yeah.
It's hot. I don't have
sensual hair. It's hot and it smells like crab.
It's pretty gross.
I just went to the boiling crab the other day again.
So good.
So good.
Do you go to the restaurant?
Yeah.
All right, that's the sucker move.
No. The one in Burbank is totally empty.
Okay.
I get the to-go.
Here's the pro tip for K-Town. Yeah, you can get it to-go, but there's a bar
that you sit at
that will let you bring your to-go nasty-ass crabs there.
The one in K-Town we would go to and then sit at that bar, but if you have children, many children will not
go
eat
to Burbank.
Crab, I'm finding, but one of mine will, so I'm 50-50. You go to the Burbank.
Many children will not eat crab.
You go... before they open.
It is
and
weird.
Then you're the first person to sit down and you're waited on by like a 16-year-old. And I said the most disconcerting thing is like it immediately brings me back to being a waiter and looking at a group of people like me and my family and being like, oh no.
These motherfuckers.
Oh no.
Oh, they're gonna need so many napkins.
And they're just gonna be loud.
I went to the K-Town Boiling Crab so many times last year that they remembered my order one time and I was like, nice. I have to stop.
What do you get?
Well, I go with a bunch of Chinese people. Mm-hmm. So it's Dungeness crabs, shrimp, and the clams, the Manila clams.
Ooh, I've never done
and
the
then
clams.
The sausage, and rice for everyone. Because they have good, like, Korean rice there, weirdly.
Really?
So what you do is you make a little rice bowl, a rice ball in your hand with all the seafood you want, and just jam the whole thing in your mouth.
What do you get a sauce on it, or just
like, yeah, this is all what
the
we're sauce. Talking
shebang, the whole yeah, shebang is what you have to do.
Tess, what's your order at the Boiling Crab?
I do the crawfish and the snow crab, and I do whole shebang.
Yeah, I do the crawfish.
I'm going to throw this to you guys. Would you eat bugs?
Well, that's what I think of. We're all dancing around here, like a bunch of dancing shrimp.
I would eat crickets, except for the fact that I'm very superstitious about crickets, and even though I eat meat, I have trouble like picturing eating a cricket, like eating the head and body.
No,
of
but it's weird because like crawfish, you really come face to face with that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And maybe with crabs and lobsters too, you're really aware of like I'm eating a sea bug.
Well, I stopped eating octopus because I just read way too much about octopus.
Yeah,
yeah. They found out that in 1964, I think, that cockroaches learn from their mistakes.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I respect the bugs because I fear the bugs.
Yeah, we should fear the fucking bugs.
I think there's something scary about, like, a million of something small that is really disconcerting to think about.
I used to play a space video game where you could build like your space army or spaceships or whatever, and the key was actually just to make, you know, everyone's building these big cruisers or whatever. It was actually just to get like 15,000 of the smallest one and have a huge cloud face off against, and you can't kill it because
maybe we have to get the bugs to go against the incels.
Ooh,
because they're all just a bunch of tiny incels versus insects, and we can crowdfund this movie, you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know what? Actually, I don't even know if I want to give this strategy away, but a friend of mine, it's basically bioterrorism is what I'm saying.
Just maybe say trademark before you say it and they can't take it.
A trademark, but also disclaimer that we're not really doing this.
Yeah.
A friend of mine told me about these ants. I think they're called, I want to say they're called raspberry ants, but maybe I made that up, that eat like computer cords.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Why?
Because they just do. Because they're like just good ants, and they're like worker ants.
They want to be off the grid. And they want to be off the grid.
They're like, you know, because bugs and computers are named for like literal bugs that would get in computers. But it really just makes you think about how
my
easy.
My dad was a computer programmer in the punch card days.
Yeah, the idea that bugs could like completely fuck us up technologically is something that I find like just so alluring. Because I'm like, you know, that's where we get in, thinking we're better than bugs.
Nope, look at Wall-E.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Bugs and bots.
Like, the bugs were here before us, and they will be here after us. That's why cockroaches, like, I don't know. I think it's also interesting to, like, dissect why I'm grossed out by bugs but not other things, you know? Like,
it's because they're scary and they're threatening.
But it's like we're conditioned to be scared of them, but, like, why do I think, like, a tiger is cute, you know?
Yeah. It's because of bigger.
Why is like a butterfly beautiful, but a moth is creepy?
Oh, I still like moths.
Well, I love moths, yeah. But butterflies have fur.
They're dusty.
But it does seem dusty.
It's just the color palette.
To the caller, to the night call question, if there was a question, it's because Japan's an island. That's why
you're right.
There you go.
Islands always have the gnarliest evolution.
Yeah, selection pressure gets
like Madagascar, how it has all of these unique species.
Yeah. Madagascar has also some fucking super sick bugs.
Yeah. Well, Andrew, thank you so much for
thanks for having me.
Solving the problem.
This is great.
And coming
wait,
on the
let's
pod.
Just go around and say our top and least top bug.
Okay, Dungeness crab is top. And least top would be the common mosquito.
Ooh, common mosquito.
Deadliest insect.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that my least favorite is the tick, and my most favorite is the Luna moth.
Ooh. I'm going to say my favorite, since I already said bees, I've been really into silkworms recently, reading about silkworms. They're super cool and fascinating.
You should get a colony.
You know, my friend's getting a beehive.
Oh, nice. Really? Jealous.
My neighbors have some bees.
Beyonce?
Bees are cool. Go respect
Wait,
the beast.
Wait, say, what's your least favorite?
Oh, my least favorite, I don't know. I don't want to, like, hate on ants because I respect them, but, like, man, I've seen my...
Kitchen ants.
I've seen my peacefulness turn to bloodlust with the ants because you're like, it's me versus them.
Well, if you have thoughts on bugs or anything else, feel free to give us a call or a text at 240-46-NIGHT, or you can email us at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at nightcallpod or on Instagram and Facebook at nightcallpodcast. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please leave us a review, rate, subscribe, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yeah, and check out Andrew's podcast, Yo, Is This Racist?
It's really great.
With the really Thank awesome you. New co-host, Hani Newsom.
Nightcall.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old Richmond, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.